I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal, and today our guest is Mimi Wu, an M&A partner at Sullivan & Cromwell in New York. Mimi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about your background on today's podcast. First of all, your decision to get a JD MBA at Columbia, and then you're opting to practice law rather than go into finance. The course of your career as an associate at Sullivan, key transactions you worked on, and then finally, how your perspective on your practice changes when you make partner. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and the JD MBA program at Columbia.
Sure. So I went to Yale undergrad, graduated in 2012. And I was always interested in kind of the intersection of law and business. Columbia has a fantastic three-year JD MBA program where you can still work both of your summers. And so I thought that was a great next step for me to figure out exactly what I wanted to do with my career.
And then describe the program a little and then how you ended up deciding to go into law rather than finance.
So the program has you starting with your law school cohorts as a 1L. So you spend all of your 1L year in the law school. You spend most of your second year with the business school, again, starting with the same cohort that you would normally be graduating with. And then the second half of the second year and the third year is just a mix with basically taking any classes that overlap or classes that kind of fit into your schedule in either of the two schools. I knew going in that I wanted to interview for a big law position and work in big law to start out with, because you just can't be trained as a lawyer any other way. I always thought, you know, I'll spend a couple of years there, figure out if it makes sense for me to continue in law as my career. But certainly I wanted the training of being a lawyer and I wanted to keep that option open. So I decided to go to Sullivan and Cromwell.
And then what did you learn or what did you get out of the MBA program that you've been able to apply as an M&A lawyer?
So certainly some of the skills that you learn in business school are very applicable early in your career, just in terms of hard skills. I think understanding accounting, understanding corporate finance, being able to go in and read a 10K and understand the balance sheet of your clients. Those hard skills are very easy, but honestly, those are things that most transactional lawyers learn pretty early in their careers. It just helps flatten the curve a little bit, which is a very steep learning curve for most people, having those classes under your belt. I think in the long run, what has been really helpful getting an MBA for is all of the soft skills that come with it. In business school, even going into orientation, we were placed into pods with a couple of other people that we attended all of our first semester classes with, very different backgrounds. And they did it intentionally to make sure that we were doing problem sets and constantly working with people with very different backgrounds. And you spend a lot of time thinking and learning about how to work as a team, how to communicate with other people who come from different situations, how to navigate the fact that some people have very different skills than you, or actually are looking for very different things from the business school program than you are. And some people might not be focused on academics. Some people might have time that they're trying to spend doing recruiting. And all of those, I think, really were valuable coming into being a lawyer, because I don't want to use the trope that lawyers are bad managers, because I think law firms are recognizing that and spending more time thinking about those sorts of managerial soft skills. But at the same time, being able to arrive in a law firm and doing M&A, which is such a team-based activity, with that kind of understanding and development of team-based skills is so valuable, because you are able to think about managing your career and also managing up and managing down as you get added to a situation where you're not super familiar with necessarily all of the hard skills.
After you started at S&C, how did you decide to go into M&A?
S&C has a generalist program where you're kind of dropped into the corporate program for 2 years and you can try a little bit of everything. My first deal that I was put on at the firm was a bankruptcy deal. My second deal was an M&A deal. I honestly loved the substance of it. I loved how it was kind of all hands on deck. I loved the teamwork component of it and being able to work with specialists. And I basically just started in those areas and haven't looked back since.
Talk about how you've continued to work on various restructuring situations in your time as a lawyer.
Sure. I do a lot of distressed M&A. I've been working on the FTX bankruptcy, which I think, especially as an M&A lawyer, has been fascinating because it's not often that we get parachuted into a situation where you spend the first 6 months thinking, oh, I have no idea what I'm even selling. I need to figure out if I have the org docs of any company that I'm actually selling, and then trying to dispose of those assets in a distressed situation. I really think about my distressed practice as a bolt-on to traditional M&A, where you have so many other stakeholders, but also so many other levers you can be pulling. So instead of just thinking about the board of directors or the board of directors and management, who are your typical clients, you're thinking about the employee base and preserving the business. You're thinking about the customers, the UCC, the ad hoc committee, if there is one, all of these other stakeholders who have a voice in how the company is going to progress. And so I love the fact that in distressed M&A, you're exposed to so many more difficulties, but you also have very unique tools to try to bring people in and build stakes in very complicated issues.
Were you at all tempted to go into bankruptcy as your core practice?
I would say I'm a deal junkie and I love doing deals. And so the bankruptcy practice part of it was not as attractive to me as just being able to be, I don't want to say parachuted in, because certainly in distressed transactions, we often have an M&A team and a bankruptcy team working on it very early on. But being able to do that aspect of the transaction is really what appeals to me.
Talk about key transactions early in your career that gave you a sense of confidence that you would be really good as an M&A lawyer.
So I think I've always had a lot of support from the firm and from mentors that I've built throughout the firm that have really encouraged me to take on responsibility as soon as I could handle it, or possibly earlier than I think I can handle it. I think a very key transaction that sticks out to me is working on the Enbridge take privates of its MLPs, its structured vehicles, back in 2018. I was a third year at the time. I think when it signed, I was a fourth year. And George Sampas, who is a great mentor of mine, brought me onto the team, having done a couple of MLP transactions as the junior associate, and let me lead the M&A team on my first public company deal, but also a transaction that had a lot of gnarly bits with respect to securities filings. And the fact that it was take private of a sponsored vehicle meant that there were a lot of process issues we were dealing with in terms of special committees and conflicted transactions. So I'm really grateful for the opportunities I had to be able to really take ownership of transactions very early in my career. And honestly, also just loved working with both that client, the teams internally, and it really cemented my view that I just wanted to be an M&A lawyer and I love doing this.
How earlier in your career do you handle a situation where you may not be totally comfortable with every aspect of what you're being asked to do?
I think you do that a lot, because I think a lot of the fun in being a lawyer and doing the sort of law that we do is being thrown into unique situations. I mean, certainly you'll start to see patterns and be able to apply things that you've learned to new situations, but encountering new problems is kind of what keeps this lively and fun. I was lucky to have the support of senior associates who let me work on merger agreements or draft my first public company merger agreement by the time I was the end of a first year. I had partners who would bring me to board meetings and ask me to do the summary of the transaction at a board meeting, I think when I was a second or a third year. And I think earning the trust of those attorneys has really helped me a lot, and those mentors has really helped me a lot in my career. But I also think it's really important to continue to challenge yourself and have people who see what you're capable of and ask you to challenge yourself and put you in those situations. And it's always helpful to just say yes. Even if you're not totally sure of yourself, just being able to go with the flow. I mean, if there's really situations where you don't think you can understand or perform, I don't think, honestly, the firm would put us in those sorts of situations. Everything, of course, still runs through other associates and partners. But I think we're always capable of more than we think we are. And it's great when other people can see that in us and push us to continue to grow.
You said earlier that when you started practice, you figured you would do it for a few years and decide how you wanted to develop your career. At what point did you realize that you wanted to spend a career as an M&A lawyer and you wanted to do that at S&C? And then how did that change your mindset as an associate and change how you related to people around you?
I think I just continued to learn and continued to be given great opportunities to lead deal teams, to negotiate with the other side, to interact with clients. And so even though I had opportunities to no longer be a big law lawyer, I felt like I was constantly still growing and learning. And so never really decided to leave. I think I was maybe a fifth or a sixth year when I decided that I actually did want to try to make a run for partnership at S&C, just given the amount of support and the opportunities that I've been getting here. And so the first person I told was actually Frank Aquila in the middle of COVID. I was like, I think I might actually be interested in doing this. And since, he and the rest of the M&A group just gave me so many opportunities. They spent a lot of time helping me figure out, you know, what deals made sense for me to work on, what partners I hadn't worked with and it would be good to develop a relationship with, how to work with new partners. And I got a lot of advice, both formal and informal, about how to navigate those last couple of years. So I think it was actually a great decision for me to make my desires known because the firm provided a ton of resources to actually make it happen.
Through your associate years, to what extent were you talking to your friends from business school who maybe chose other career paths and getting a sense of their experiences and whether or not those might appeal to you and how your own experience at a law firm was different from their experiences at, say, investment banks or private equity sponsors?
So I think it's really interesting actually to see how our careers have converged over the years. I think coming out of law school or business school, the first couple of years you spend pretty separately with investment bankers really learning the model, learning their industry, and lawyers learning how to draft a contract. But especially talking to them, I found it so interesting that as we get more senior, both of us in our careers, a lot of what we do kind of narrows. It becomes much more strategic, even though we're advising on different aspects of the transaction. Ultimately, we spend a lot of time talking to each other, often offline, before we even come to the client with a recommendation that is strategic in nature. And so you kind of see career paths converging, at least within investment banking and M&A law. I think some of my friends have shifted from investment banking to buy side, and that feels like a very different animal. Because private equity, they have an ownership stake. And so the way that they think about a transaction changes, it's less advisory and much more that they're actually buying into the vehicles and they have a personal stake in seeing whatever investment they have succeed. So it's a different risk profile than what we do. But it is very interesting that I think a lot of my friends are now becoming VPs or MDs at investment banks, and they are doing a lot more of what I do. I'm doing a lot more of what they do than we started out with because we're both reading the merger agreement and we're both looking at the same big issues, especially in public company M&A.
Talk just a little bit about your sense of your B-school classmates who have gone to the principal side and just how different that is, taking principal risk as opposed to being an advisor.
That's exactly it. Taking principal risk, I think, really requires a shift in mindset. Certainly, they're looking at their investments in a different way. They have a lot more personal ownership over those investments. As an advisor, I think, of course, we want our clients to succeed, but we are still outside looking in terms of the strategic impact of certain of those transactions. And I think it's very different when you're working at a private equity fund and you might be tied to this investment for a significant period of time. And it's going to impact the fund's life as well as potentially your own personal profits. So I do think that it becomes a little bit more of a different animal.
Talk about a critical deal or critical couple of deals in the year or two before you made Artmer?
So I think one of the most, or the two most critical deals were right before Labor Day last year, which was the year I made Partner. I actually worked with the same two partners on both deals, George Sampas and Audra Cohen. It was the acquisition for Enbridge of three separate local gas distribution companies, so gas utilities in three different geographies, which were not cross-conditioned. And in that exact same week, we signed for a company called CNS, the acquisition of the divestiture package from the Kroger-Albertsons transaction. It was certainly very hectic, but it was a ton of fun because George and Audra and I were basically playing tag through these two deals. We would be texting each other constantly saying, hey, can you take this call while I negotiate this other point and let's swap here? And it was great to be able to see the amount of connectivity between the partners working together. It was great that I was given a ton of responsibility on both deals and able to kind of negotiate between the two. And I think it really cemented my decision to become a partner here at SNC because I could see kind of how much fun people were having, even in the most stressful of times when you're trying very hard to satisfy a couple of different clients on very different transactions.
What would you say the funnest deal you've ever worked on was?
I still think my time last year was some of the most fun that I had. I mean, it was very hectic, but it was fascinating both academically to be thinking about two very different transactions that had very different types of regulatory risk or regulatory components, as well as the deal teams and the partnerships that made it really fantastic. The Enbridge transaction, because their local gas distribution companies had the whole slate of state regulatory approvals that were necessary. And so this was my first time coming across state regulators. It's very different than the FTC, but a very political animal in itself. And of course, on the CNS deal at the same time, we were constantly concerned about, you know, how this divestiture would play in connection with the Kroger-Albertsons divestiture, which is currently still being reviewed by the FTC. So it was just fascinating on all fronts.
How does becoming a partner at a law firm change your mentality about your own practice, your relationship to the people you practice with?
So on the day when partners were announced, I got a flood of emails from the other partners, a number of whom I had never worked with and some of whom I had never even met, saying, welcome to the partnership. We're so excited to work with you for the next couple of decades. And I think that was really striking, a little jarring, honestly, to me, because you spend so much time as an associate being like, okay, what's my next step? I know I'll be up for partner X year, or maybe I'll make a move. But once you get accepted into the partnership, all of a sudden your time horizons just change. They lengthen. Now you're thinking, wow, I could be doing this for decades. I'm going to be working with these people for decades. And I really need to start thinking about the long game in terms of developing my relationships internally and also what I'm doing externally with the firm and with clients. So I think that mindset shift has been really, really fascinating.
What legal issues are top of mind for you now in your practice?
So I think, and you've probably heard this a lot this year, everybody is thinking about Delaware at this point. It's something that our clients are constantly asking about. I think it's just the uncertainty of it. People have gone to Delaware for decades and decades because, of course, like the law changes, but you never feel like the rug is pulled out from under you. And now we've seen some cases where we have to think about whether or not very well-trodden, established practices in M&A are still the appropriate practices, both in the controller context and outside of the controller context, in terms of board approvals for transactions, for instance. And so I think it's just that level of uncertainty. But at the same time, at the Tulane conference, we got a lot of comfort from senior judges in Delaware saying, hey, don't worry about it. Delaware is still a completely functioning state and everything will be resolved. So I think it's really just that level of uncertainty that everybody is considering right now. That's certainly been top of mind, I think, in every M&A lawyer's practice. I think the second thing is regulatory continues to be top of mind for everybody, especially in an election year. trying to figure out what's going to happen to the markets and what's going to happen to transactions in the next 6 months or 12 months.
And then finally, how do you maintain a sense of balance in your life, especially in that last year or two before making partner, which are so demanding from a work perspective?
So I think it's just so important to have a strong support network going into a time like that. Some of my best friends are my friends from high school. We've all ended up in different places in very, very different careers. But at the same time, it's so easy for me to just pick up with them. And it's also really nice to have friends who are honestly, who are not lawyers, to be talking about things that are not related to work constantly. And so for me, a lot of decompression is being able to go to people that I don't feel like I have to talk to work about, but who understand the process I'm going through and who have kind of seen me from way, way before. That it's so easy just to pick up with them and go to dinner and just relax. So I think that has been a huge help for me in terms of just having that escape from my everyday job.
Mimi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
For Drinks with a Deal, I'm David Martins.